Today's show is sponsored by Claude. Learn about it at claude.ai/PMP. Hey, this is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, a little Halloween mini-sode. It's just me, Mark Litzenmeyer, I should say, host of several other podcasts, including The Partial Exam in Life and Naked the Eagle Exam Music and Philosophers Improv and Close Reads Philosophy with Mark and Wes.
Holy crap. Keep going. How many more do you have?
I do some teaching still, you know, okay. Through over the internet. So it's kind of like a podcast.
And then you do the podcast Mark Talks About Porn.
No. This is Lawrence's Wishcast. All right. Well, introduce yourself for people that...
My name is Lawrence Ware, professor of philosophy, podcaster extraordinaire. I am a very confused man right now. We can talk about why I'm confused.
Yes. So this was going to be a regular Pretty Much Pop episode. Again, if you folks are not subscribed to the Pretty Much Pop podcast, and I don't mean listening to it through the Partial Exam in Life feed, I mean to subscribe to it directly. Do so.
Come on.
At the links through prettymuchpop.com. We're going to talk about this Ed Gein Monsters miniseries, but right. Our other two co-hosts... Well, at least one of them simply...
She didn't have the stomach for it.
Yeah, yeah. She just did not want to dwell on this. But I had already put the time into this. So I was like, all right, we're going to have a half-hour discussion or something with just us that, you know, you're the connoisseur in this area. But you are fresh. You minutes before we started recording.
I just finished it. And I am so confused about how I feel about this show. I mean, it's important to lay out that this is a show that is but one of many. So there have been other Monsters miniseries. There was one about Jeffrey Dahmer. The Menendez brothers, I believe, was another one. And this is the third one. I think the next one is going to be about Lizzie Borden.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's going to be the next one. So this is a franchise, if you will. And this particular series, the one about Ed Gein, I'm really mixed on how I feel about it because the earlier ones were pretty straightforward narratives about what happened. This one goes into flights of fancy, magical realism, commentary on culture. This is a strange one.
Yes, and we're inevitably going to be doing some spoilers here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is not a recommend. I'm not saying stop this and go watch it immediately.
I don't think you should watch it. I mean, if... It's so strange. It's like it is such a niche thing. If you're really into serial killers and you don't mind gore and the macabre, watch it. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, what do we think? First off, Charlie Hunnam, and otherwise,
I thought it was a great performance. I thought he did a wonderful job. I would not be surprised at all if he were nominated for Emmys, if he won an Emmy, because this is unlike anything that he's ever done before. I was really impressed with his performance.
He always reminds me physically, the guy who played the Joker and then died, Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that he's sort of a comparable figure in terms of his presence and his range, apparently?
Well, no.
Okay.
Because this performance is not on the level of the Joker. The Joker is just a transcendental, once-in-a-lifetime performance, and this isn't quite that. I think he tries to go for that.
So the thing, right, it's the tonal weirdness of all this.
Yeah.
Is that you've got your sort of standard horror thing, and I guess... So originally I had proposed if our co-hosts weren't going to do this, that you got on Brucker from, what's his name of his podcast? That you were going to guest on?
Autopsy of a Horror Film.
Autopsy of a Horror Film.
And we're in the middle of Lawtober, actually. I just recorded last night our last commentary track. I've done three of those in the past, 3 weeks. It's been a very busy week of horror stuff with him on that podcast.
He does very thorough analyses, scene by scene of films like In a Violent Nature, which is...
Yeah.
Quite violent, but it yet said violent, yeah. He's not into this serial killer stuff, and maybe it's the true crime aspect. And I remember when we had our Based on a True Story episode, you were kind of like, can't you just tell a story without relating it to real? Aren't we somehow defaming, disrespecting the fact that it's related to real people? Why introduce that grossness? Did you feel that about this show?
I absolutely did. And the reason why, but it's so strange because with the Dahmer show, I didn't feel that. With the Menendez brothers show, I didn't feel that. But with this one, I did. And I think the reason why I felt that way is because this show so ventures away from what actually happened and makes it very sensational and very tabloidy. But I think I know what the show is trying to do because there are films like Psycho that the show references and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Silence of the Lambs that do that. So it's making a comment on those things. It's just, I did feel that way about this show because it was just so over the top and so weird and so strange with the choices that the script writers made. So I did feel that way, but even grosser, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so a number of elements here that it tries to redeem itself with some sort of social commentary at the end. And I think I might have gotten that I found it effective at the end of the second to last episode. It's been a week or so since I watched this, so it's a little hazy. Where this fellow has been institutionalized and he makes it clear, like, you know, you're supposed to be curing me, but it's clear it doesn't matter if I'm cured. I'm never going to be let free. I'm never going to be, you know, this is, which, not that you feel terribly bad for him because, you know, but he is presented as somebody that is certifiably insane. Like that other people might
He
suspect that
is.
he is merely faking and that he has evil at his core, but he is just a, you know, a pitiable nut job. So I can carry that as far as they have it, that episode. But then at the end of the whole thing where he dies and they have this whole like ascension to heaven sort of thing, and I know it's sort of him from his point of view, and obviously it's fantastical because you don't know what he experienced, but that he finally gets the love of his clearly insane mother that he would never have gotten in a million years. Yeah, that sort of, that left me cold. That left me confused. I feel like that's maybe what you were reeling from.
But also let's back up a little bit because he was not helping people solve serial killer murders at all. Like that is just completely fabricated. If you do just a little bit of research, I was so taken aback by that. I was watching it and fact checking it in real time. He did none of that. I don't understand why they even included that. Like, so that made no sense to me. And they kind of made me a little upset with it. And I know that Mark is going to check it. So he's going to check this here in real time. But my research, just a little bit of Googling, he did none of that. Like, that was completely fictional. I don't know why that was included. And then there's a little bit of a harking back to the Manhunter show because the people who showed up in this are people who very much look like the Manhunter actors and actresses, and so much so that I had to kind of double check. And then it goes to the end. And like, this is a person who did really, really bad things. And I don't know how I feel about them. Not valorizing, but them depicting him as so sympathetic at the end, it just made me feel icky.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all. I don't know, man. I mean, I get it that everyone is a human being and that we are all human beings trying to strive on this physical plane, trying to make our way. Some of us, you know, kill, some of us don't, but nevertheless, we're all human beings. I get that, and I get trying to understand the humanity of Ed Gein, but making him a sympathetic figure, that's a stretch for me. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, maybe to put that aside. How, so,
Yeah,
because there's
because that,
the other two main
no.
elements are the depiction of his actual crimes, which you're saying is very sensationalized and tabloidy.
And honestly, and I didn't mind that. I mean, I didn't mind that at the time. That's early in the series.
Sure,
I
sure.
didn't mind that. That's typical horror stuff. That's Halloween stuff. I was good with that.
And part of that is that he hallucinates. So some of the crimes that are shown, like they want to show. So the third main element that we'll talk about is the how it this real crime affected horror movies and our horror culture and the what did they call it? The sex horror genre. It was
Yeah,
something
whatever that
like
is. It's
that
something
that
like that.
they. So we're gonna for sure get to that. And I thought maybe you and I would have had watched more in this area than our co-hosts, and we could just get all this out of the way. You mentioned
I've watched all of it.
Terrifier
Yeah.
as
I've
sort
watched
of
all this stuff, yes.
the latest most,
Yeah.
but yeah, focusing on this one in particular, Right. So they add in like this love story, and he, yeah, they allow him to try to show this connection to Psycho. They show him murdering his girlfriend, which he did not do. Cause so that, and later he has a chainsaw thing with a nurse, and they say, oh, this is actually him hallucinating as well. And this is part of that, in addition to actually committing some crimes, which initially I looked up that there are only two people that he confirmed actually killed. So I don't know about like the guys in the woods that he chased with the chainsaw, if that's a real thing.
I have
or if there's any chainsaw, because to say that the Chainsaw Massacre movie is influenced by this, you would assume he used some chainsaws at some point. But if he only killed the two people, then that seems like that is entirely a fantastical element on the part of those filmmakers.
Yeah, Tobe Hooper and all those guys. Yeah. I mean, I do think that the necrophilia, having dead people, whatever, that's inspired by him. And also the fact that Leatherface wears the face of a dead person, that's inspired by him. But the chainsaw thing, I think that's totally Tobe Hooper and his crew. I don't think that's anything related whatsoever to Ed Gein. As far as I know, I have no idea. I'm not an expert on Ed Gein, so I'm not sure.
We do not care enough about this franchise we did our five minutes of Googling here, and I just confirmed that there's no evidence that he helped catch a serial killer.
What was that about?
Those people even interviewed him. So yes, if we were doing this for a real episode, I would probably make a point to watch or, you know, listen to another podcast with the filmmakers to see why they made some of these choices, which are very, as you say, strange in terms of the depiction of the actual crime. I mean, we're going to present some of this not chronologically, which is always an interesting move anyway.
And I have no problem with that. I mean, that's a filmmaker choice. You know, that's fine. In the same way that people make choices about changing film stock or whatever, I have no problem with that. Magical realism, I'm cool with that. It's just that what they used these filmmaking tools to do, that's... So they use the fact that he's schizophrenic to show us things, and then it pulls the curtain back and say these things actually didn't happen. So he has these radios, and he allegedly has these conversations with the Buchenwald woman. They call her the Bee of Buchenwald, whatever. And he seemingly has these conversations.
Just say the butcher. That's not it, but yes.
Well, I thought it was a B-I-T-C-H.
You're right, but she was a butcher. Okay, that is the point. That she was somebody who made human lamps out of the skin of concentration camp prisoner. Whether this is a real person, again, I'm
pretty sure she is. Okay. She's real. She's real. I did check on her. She's real. And I was horrified to learn more about her. But he never had the conversation. But it depicts it as though he did. And so it uses the guise that he has schizophrenia to pull the rug back. And oh my goodness, he doesn't actually have this conversation. So those are things that I kind of don't mind. That's okay. It's weird, but it's okay. That's typical filmmaking. What I have the problem with is the latter stuff where he goes on a stairway to heaven, where he has all these things. That's the problem that I have with it.
Yes. So just discounting that last 20 minutes.
The last episode, honestly, really the whole last episode.
I mean, so you feel like the rest of it was a reasonably compelling... I didn't watch, you know, I expected this whole thing, it's a Ryan Murphy production, and I expected it to be... I've actually watched a number of those, most of the seasons of American Horror Story. And it is one of the things that makes me feel gross and that I'm kind of wasting my time, and that, like, there are very few things that, I don't know, that make me feel that way, but that make me feel bad for owning a TV. This is a sort of a meta conversation that we're both philosophers, and yet we take in enough media that we can have these conversations. And I think a lot of philosophers would see there's something fundamentally wrong with that. That there's so, like, why can't we be
really
reading, you know, F.H. Bradley, filling in our gaps in our philosophical history rather than spending time with this stuff. I don't usually feel that way. There, you know, I could give a layout of my life and my choices and why this is a thing that I find easy enough to do that I can fit in. You know, this podcast is relatively effortless compared to the other ones. You know, but even if we're gonna like watch five movies or something to prep, like if I'm in the mood, if I'm on a roll, that's fine. Right. And in Halloween time specifically, I don't mind getting in this mood for this. Did you find that this thing, you know, with the true crime element, satisfied that mood, that whatever it is that makes you so like horror movies during Halloween time, or is the fact that it's based on a real thing. Well, no, that's more sad. And again, this is what Brucker maybe was saying. I'm not into serial killer stuff. He's not into true crime stuff. He's definitely into In a Violent Nature. He's definitely into serial killer horror movie depictions, Halloween stuff.
Yeah, fictional.
But fictional stuff. Yeah. How do you feel about this in that respect?
I kind of hated it. I didn't like it whatsoever. And that is not to say that I won't watch the next series that comes out, because I have this relationship with this kind of stuff where I watched, like, so for example, I watched The Terrifier. I watched all three of those Terrifier movies and I hated every second of it. Like, it's just, I don't know. I have this thing about me where if it's horror, I really want to understand it. And the thing about this show is that I'm not even sure it's horror. It's true crime, to be sure, but it's also drama and tragedy, a love story as well. And so it's not really scary to me. It doesn't have any of the horror elements that I enjoy, because part of what's fun about horror is that it's not real and that it is something you can watch and, you know, oh, sick kill, but you're not actually watching a recreation of something that actually genuinely happened. Even if you watch Psycho, you're not watching a recreation of something that actually happened. You're watching something that's inspired by something that happened, but not a recreation of something that happened. So to watch a recreation of something that did genuinely happen to a human being, oh man, that makes me feel icky. Whereas with the Menendez brothers, the parents who were killed, I'm not like happy that they're killed, but I understand it here. With the schizophrenia thing, it just makes me feel very uncomfortable and makes me not happy that I spent so much time watching it, even though I don't necessarily regret it, but I'm not happy that I did it, if that makes any kind of sense. I'm just kind of all over the place emotionally with this show.
It was
a
unique experience.
Yes. And I'm happy that I had it, but I will be happy to never have anything like it ever again.
Oh, you like the unique sensory experiences. Let me give you this Rubik's Cube looking box to play with. And you will experience new frontiers of pain.
Okay, Mr. Hellraiser, I know what you're doing.
I actually
there.
Watched the revival of that, the 2023 one. Just
I actually did too.
Within the last few
it.
Weeks.
I kind of enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. I kind of enjoyed that new one. It was kind of fun. It was crazy, but it was fun.
Well, yeah, so we're getting into...
Streaming on Hulu if you want to watch it.
Let us stop and talk about our sponsors, the first of which is a Surfshark VPN. You should be using a virtual private network. It is a way of connecting to the internet through a third-party server such that the websites you visit will not be able to see who you are, where you are. You will have not only this privacy, but your data will also be secure. If you are, for instance, on a public network, you're at a coffee shop, you're in a hotel, the information going to and from your computer will be encrypted. Nobody else on that network would be able to hack in and steal your information. Now, Surfshark has 3,200 servers in over 100 countries. So when you connect, you can choose to say, have it look like I'm in the UK or South Africa, wherever you want to be. And then the sites you visit, for instance, Netflix, will think you are logging on from that country, and they will give you the content that is appropriate to that country, which for many of your streaming services will really increase the value of those subscriptions, because different stuff is offered in different countries. I've used this many times to watch different UK sitcoms and things, or the Canadian version of Traitors. Now, you can use this on all of your devices. It's very easy to install. There's no limit on them in your plan. And while you're looking into this, look into Surfshark's other products like Surfshark Alert, which is a data leak monitoring tool that will let you know if your information gets leaked online. So you should definitely be using some kind of VPN, and you'll find that Surfshark is surprisingly cheap, very easy to operate, very reliable, offers 24/7 customer support, and offers a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. Secure your privacy with Surfshark. Go to surfshark.com/PMP for 4 extra months of Surfshark. And if you don't remember that URL, just go look at the show notes. surfshark.com/PMP. I also want to tell you about Claude AI. Recently, somebody requested a spreadsheet of all of our episodes. And I don't have such a thing. It would take me a long time paging through my site. Well, I went to Claude AI and I asked it for this, and it walked me through how, okay, I'm going to write a Python script to look this up. And I was able to get this spreadsheet with each episode categorized by its main topic area. So then I could sort it later, see how many times have we covered video games? Are we overdue for an episode on podcasting? I could tell it to change the sheet and show what guests were on what show. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. So I'm not so much of a coder, but I do work with some HTML. Rather than having to look up each little bit of HTML code that I want to use, I just tell Claude, hey, I want this in HTML. This is what I want it to do. And I like to write my own text, but I could ask Claude to generate some of that text to give me a rough draft to start with. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/PMP. That's claude.ai/PMP right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/PMP. We're getting into the shadow that this real crime is depicted as having cast. With Psycho, what makes Psycho an effective horror movie is the suspense, is you know, the first time that anybody, and they present like it being shown in a theater in this Ed Gein thing, what it was like for people who were not used to this kind of filmmaking. This was not
right.
There was no The Terrifier. There's no Bloody Pit of Horror. None of that stuff was around yet. And so this was, you know, truly groundbreaking. And they present it as like, well, it's groundbreaking, but is it good? You're sort of asking. They're saying the same thing about Psycho as we're saying about this Ed Gein miniseries. We're saying
this
crossed some boundary and was an
interesting. Was it worth it? Was it worth that boundary?
Are we worse people
for having? And I mean, and I find it interesting because that scene, I believe it happens in like episode 2 or 3. I remember what episode it is, but it shows Alfred Hitchcock making the film, whatever. And then he shows the film in a movie theater and people are like throwing up because of what they've seen on screen. And he's walking around with like a smug look on his face, like very proud of himself for what he has done. And I found that to be interesting because I think the Psycho is one of the greatest films that's ever been made. It's a hallmark of filmmaking, both horror and otherwise. Yet, it did open the door for all this bad stuff to come through. Had there been no Psycho, there would have been no Texas Chainsaw Massacre or anything else. Because Psycho looks tame now compared to those films. But Psycho opened the door for the really bad stuff to be made. I'm happy that it opened that door because I love horror. But I get the commentary that it's trying to make, yet, nevertheless, I'm very mixed on how I feel because not only does the show depict that film, but it also toys with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
It toys with the Silence of the Lambs. Like, it's making a comment that all those things that are hallmarks of our culture are inspired by Ed Gein. And so how do we feel about that? That is ultimately what's going on there.
Yeah, so just to take them step by step. So what's great about Psycho is, yes, the suspense of that shower scene, and then the big suspense of somebody discovering that the mother sitting by the window is really a corpse. Like, those are the two big scenes, and those are recreated in this miniseries. Again,
yes,
one of them is him hallucinating that he's killing his girlfriend, so they're able to sort of show him as if he is doing the thing that the character does in Psycho. And then there's an actual sort of suspense scene where a couple times the girlfriend, who is not dead, is going up and Ed Gein has placed a corpse that is not actually his mother's corpse, but his sort of, he thinks, spiritually stands in for his mother. And she, the first time, doesn't quite get there and, you know, doesn't realize. And the second time they actually recreate that. Did you find like that scene, like the second one where she actually discovers it, did that have any of the, what you would watch an actual horror movie for? Like, it did seem like it was presented with the same sort of suspense. And is she going to figure it out this time? Is she going to run from the house screaming? What's going to happen?
No, it did. I mean, because the suspense of that scene is really what carried it over into horror for me. Because, you know, Alfred Hitchcock famously said that it's not a bomb going off that is, you know, what suspense is. Suspense is the bomb under the table and you know that it's under the table and it's ticking, and you're waiting to see what's going to happen next. And so that scene where she is going up to the corpse and the tension that happens there is not the revelation of the corpse, but rather the tension that leads up to the revelation of the corpse that makes that scene work. And so I thought that was perfectly fine. It was good suspense. It was well done. It would have been better in the context of a movie than a television show. And that's where my criticism kind of jumps in that we can talk about a little bit later on about whether or not we prefer miniseries to just movies, like horror miniseries to just straight up horror movies, whether that is, or whether this is a good vehicle for that kind of stuff. But as far as like itching that scratch of horror for me, it absolutely itches the scratch.
In a movie, there definitely would not have been space to explore some of these little side streets. Like there are two things that tried to address, right? If it has Ryan, if it's a Ryan Murphy thing, and actually Ryan Murphy did not write or direct this,
No,
so
he
it actually
didn't.
was
He did
less
not.
trashy than I thought it would be.
Than
Given,
what he would have done, yeah, given
yes,
him,
less
because he's a
campy. Let's
trashy
put
dude.
it campy.
No,
There was
trashy.
no.
Trashy's right. I think
Okay.
trashy is the right word for what he does. He's pretty
But he
trashy.
does care a lot about, gay, trans
He
themes.
does.
And so we have the very tragic part, which presumably is factual about Anthony Perkins, both, making this comparison between that the Hitchcock character makes between him and Ed Gein, that you're both hiding a secret. Basically, I know you're gay, and that's why I think you could play this well, because the character is hiding a thing and you're hiding a thing. I mean, on the face of it, that sounds hugely insulting to, like, it's just not the same kind of secret. But
I
I could see
agree.
how it could feel if you're in that culture and you've been taught that what you are is a sin, then you could feel that what you're, but it just seems like the analogy just doesn't work, right? Ed Gein is
Yeah, it
presented
doesn't
as
work.
somebody who he's not actually hiding something. He's just nuts. He's like, whereas a young man dealing with being gay in a setting that does not allow him to present that and having to deal with that, I see no real comparison. But it was a nice depiction of, again, it was sort of off topic. I don't know, what did you think of that inclusion of that little piece of pathos?
I'm really unsure because I do think that Ed Gein is hiding something. Like he
Sure.
enjoys putting on the, bra and panties of women.
Yeah,
So
okay.
there's something he's hiding there. And I think that he's not sure about his mental illness early in the show. And so the things that he's feeling and experiencing and the fact that he's digging up these bodies, he's hiding something. But I don't like that the show makes what Anthony Perkins was dealing with, because that he was a gay man, even though he had a son, Oz Perkins. Oz Perkins is, of course, the director of The Monkey and Long Legs and The Black Coat's Daughter, which I think is actually a wonderful movie.
I actually did not know that connection, but okay,
Yeah,
great.
that's his father. He's the son. And so Anthony Perkins was a gay man who was struggling with his sexuality, but I don't like he making what was going on with Anthony Perkins equivalent to what was going on with Ed Gein. This doesn't seem like a right equivalency. That's not the same thing.
It
And
seems like it's a
I don't
slippery
love that.
slope argument, which clearly that's
Very
not what
quickly, very
it's not
quickly.
what the, if this was an anti-gay property, then you could see somebody sort of making that comparison as if
Making
to
that,
say, hiding that you're
yes,
gay is just like hiding that you
that you're a serial
like
killer or whatever,
to
yeah.
have sex with dead bodies. Like, okay,
Right.
yeah, they're both things that were not approved by society, but there's one that should have been okay with society, and the other one that we think comfortably, unless this is trying to challenge us, then maybe, oh, maybe we should, not respect, not, I don't know. There's these occasional like philosophical. If some people are just attracted to underage people, or they're attracted to dead
Right.
bodies, like, and
Right.
that's not something that they can help, well, probably we would want them to go through a sort of conversion therapy,
They would
right?
need
But
something.
we know that conversion therapy, if you're gay, doesn't work and is only destructive. So is there a
Right.
way, and I don't want to open this up as a real topic for us, but just
Don't
the
do it.
fact that
Don't
this
do it
is
yet.
something that is discussed of, okay, well, could you use AI generated porn or something? Is there some way that somebody who realizes they have this completely antisocial, unrealizable thing, could they, like, this is the natural extension through all these properties that through the Terrifier, which is all about the most disgusting body horror that you could imagine.
It is so horrible. It is such a horrible series of movies.
AI created VR, the most despicable kind of porn, so that anybody's kink. And there's, you know, there's at least a theory. There's two theories. One of which is, if you experience this kind of thing, like you play Call of Duty, that makes you want to commit violence. This makes you, so if you see rape in film, this makes you more likely. Or the other theory is, it actually makes you less likely that you are, if you have these and I'm not a psychologist. I don't actually know.
I've never thought about
where that works.
I've never thought about that. Right.
But I mean, that's certainly essential for thinking about whether it's okay that horror movies like the ones that this Ed Gein film seems to ultimately be objecting to, but that we have put ourselves in a self-hating way through watching the Terrifier movies.
Right.
Yeah. What, you know, if you're going to ask, is it okay philosophically, is it okay ethically that those things exist, that people watch those? I think this is something you have to come to terms with, because even though presumably you and I, we don't want these things to happen in real life, this is not getting us off.
We absolutely do not. Yeah.
We're not enjoying it in that way. I enjoy this kind of stuff, I'll just say, from a special effects point of view, insofar as I enjoy it at all. And I'll say, I started watching Terrifier 3 this morning because I knew we were going to have this discussion and I'd seen the other ones.
Oh my goodness. But wait, you've seen the other ones?
Yes. I think on your recommendation last year.
I don't think I knew that you saw those. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I brought that.
But I appreciate it from I just picture those guys that just love doing like bloody special effects.
The special effects are great. They really are. Yeah.
And I think body horror in particular, like that is we just cannot escape being twitchy about, you know, I've described in some of our discussions or things on the podcast where I find something where somebody gets like stabbed in the hand or you know, much worse than Jason that, you know, Friday the 13th, because I don't feel that I'm actually going to be split in half by a machete. I just don't think that's going to happen. But yet I could actually cut my finger off while cutting an onion. Like that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. So that's much more. And I feel like Terrifier tries to play on all these body horror things try to play on that in a way that I don't know what is the appeal for you? Is there any appeal
for the Terrifier? There's no appeal. Now I just finished it because I'm a glutton for punishment, and once I start something, I got to finish it. You know, so I finish it because I got to finish it. But man, that was a deeply I did not enjoy that viewing experience of any of those movies. And to be honest, and I'm just going to be honest and transparent here for everybody who's listening, this is the reason why you want to watch these mini episodes and all that kind of stuff, because you get the transparency law. I had to cover my eyes as I was watching that movie. It grossed me out so much. I was watching the movie through closed eyes. I was hiding my face. I couldn't handle it. It was just over the top. But I was interested in the story, but I couldn't handle the gore. You know, I don't know. I've been reading a great deal of science about horror because I'm trying to get at what is it about me that is attracted to this. And I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know why I enjoy it so much. But there's something about me that I am attracted to these horror films, and I'm really interested in them. But yet something about this show disgusted me, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on with me, where there are certain horror things that I like and I enjoy and I want more of. And there's other horror things like Ed Gein, even the Dahmer show made me uncomfortable, where I'm like, I don't like it and I don't want to watch this. So I'm trying to figure that out. And this is my this is my counseling couch where I can come and talk to you and get some philosophical counseling and try to figure out what's going on with me.
So at least one of the things that we are doing is it's a philosophical exercise. If it's know thyself, it is trying to understand that I'm putting myself through this, but I'm not sure why I'm putting myself through this. Indeed. I mean, it's sort of because it's there in a way, but clearly that doesn't hold for, I don't feel the need to see every rom-com.
Nor do I.
Yet, things, especially like these Osgood Perkins thing that sort of stretched the bounds slightly. Like there's bad horror for sure, but it's bad when it's boring. Like, I'm just not going to watch Leprechaun
right
2 or something. Like, there's no
I've
point.
Never seen any of those Leprechaun movies. I don't know if I like
I think
those.
I saw number one.
Is it good? Is it worth watching?
Probably not. Yeah, probably even in its initial incarnation. Doesn't the first one, though, have, like, Jennifer Aniston?
Jennifer Aniston. But okay. There's so many sequels. Like, it makes me wonder if I should watch
it. I think I might have seen the first one at some point. And, yeah, just for the cultural, I would rather see, I think that's a public service that Riff Trax does so this is one of the things they show. Sorry, I'm being very scattered here. To finish the first thought.
It's a mini episode. We can be scattered. That's fine.
We contemplate why we are watching these things. I am leery of the fact that some people are probably watching it and just getting off from it. And
that disturbs me
there are people like that in the world, but I don't know what to make of them. I mean, in other words, is this, as I was saying before, does this get something out of their system such that they can just be nice people in real life? Or does this disturb them profoundly in a way that Ed Gein is depicted as being disturbed? Of course, he was hearing about supposedly real life Nazi atrocities, but I guess through a comic book. So again, through a very fictionalized, sensationalized, purposefully dark and titillating, you know, this guy, you know, presented for entertainment. And that this at least one of the theories presented is that this just broke him as a person and made him, you know, at least contributed to him performing
being
his
who
acts.
Being who he was or doing the things that he did.
So that was one of the things. Oh yeah, so going through the chain of movies. So Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this is actually presented as if Tobe Hooper hates the audience, hates the world, feels like this is what you have earned, you bastards. You who have been the audience created by Psycho, who's watching stuff like Bloody Pit of Horror. So this is the other sidetrack that I have seen the movie Bloody Pit of Horror. I don't even know that movie.
I've never seen that movie because it's
a Riff Trax. That's the only reason I would watch it. So you can watch these movies that would just be boring and stupid and have nothing going for them because people are making jokes through the whole thing. And I like those guys. I like that style of humor. It never gets old for me for some reason. This is my way. I have not seen a lot of the classics of the 1940s and the 1950s, but I've seen a lot of shitty movies from the 1940s and 1950s through the Mystery Science Theater Riff Trax parade of anyway,
I'm gonna check that out. I've never watched that before, so this is like the third or second time you said Bloody Pit of Horror. I'm like, is this a horror thing that I've never seen? I gotta check this out.
It's the one that's on the marquee when in the Ed Gein miniseries when Alfred Hitchcock and his wife are like, see what you've wrought. Bloody Pit of Horror is the number, and they actually show
that's the movie.
A scene.
Got you.
Yeah, as one of the things that was influenced by this. Okay, then fast forward another 5 years or so, a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Tobe Hooper is depicted as this movie has to be made. It is what you, the audience, deserves. Clearly, he's a special effects guy. I want to design a skin face or multiple skin faces, and I'm actually very particular about how the lipstick is and how you are wearing it and whether you are depicting the grossness. Yeah, what did you make of this whole mini? It makes me want to see a whole documentary. I think there might be a documentary, but I haven't seen
there's one coming out here.
Yeah,
soon,
okay.
Actually,
so maybe we can follow up on this. But what did you make so far about?
I don't know if I want to. If I'm being honest with you, I thought that was interesting. I don't know how accurate that is, but I thought it was interesting. And I do think that there is certainly room for there to be a cultural conversation about the way that real serial killers or real criminals inspire the films that we love. And why do we love those films if they're inspired by these real things? Like, that's an interesting conversation. I don't know if I liked the way that this show did it, but I'm interested in that conversation to be sure.
Then the next thing was the Silence of the Lambs thing, and not the whole Silence of the Lambs, but just the depiction of Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
As tucking and dancing around. It's sort of the most notorious scene.
Right.
You know, it puts
and
the
lotion on its
skin. And
they showed it multiple times in the show. They showed it multiple times in the show. It was like shown one time in the movie for shocking effect.
Yes.
It's sort of like three times in the show.
That Ed Gein is dancing around like this. Ed Gein is dancing around with the chainsaw, like at the end of Chainsaw Massacre. That they had to make that connection multiple times, you know, both of these things.
Right.
But then they tried to
end for good measure.
Yes, and they tried over the top. Tried to then, well, this thing again. It seems like this whole thing could be a really anti-LGBTQ plus thing, but mm-hmm. we know it's not. And right. so there's going to have this whole, is he trans? And they want to clear, like, no, he's not trans.
He's not.
He has this mm-hmm. other thing, and we're going to first depict it with him the second of his hallucinated radio calls with this presumably a real person.
It was a real person. I'd never heard of that person before, but they were a real person.
But a yeah. successful singer who was mm-hmm. transitioned to being a woman mm-hmm. and apparently was lauded, was famous. Was mm-hmm. is that true that in the 60s or the 50s or whenever the hell this was?
I had never heard so of that person novel, before, but this apparently, was a, yeah.
That
yeah,
this, I guess if
I'd never heard of that person.
If it's a one-off, mm-hmm. if people think like this is a technological breakthrough, this is like then it's just like, okay, well, we're people maybe until they see it's a trend, then the conservatives don't rise up and like want to squash all trans people. Like if it's just one, like they're not going to like it, but they're, you know, right. it'll be something that is tolerated as a, you know, as a circus act or as some form of, yeah. you know, just like people liked Liberace. Like Liberace is as gay as they could
very
be
good point.
In a very non-gay time.
Never thought about that. But that's a very good point.
But he was seen as sort of harmless and one-off. Yeah. And like, so anyway, this person is initially, it's depicted that she is the one that is telling him, no, you're not trans. You have this, you know, you want to be so close to women that you need to women. Be in their skin. What are they?
Yeah.
Do you remember the technical
term? I don't even know what, the, okay. what it was called. Yeah. I don't even know what the technical term
presumably
was.
It's and a real honestly, thing.
Is it a real thing? I had never heard of that term before in my life.
I would be surprised if it's not a real
probably is
diagnosis yeah. that was made at some point, whether it's medically accurate right. or not. But then it is revealed that it's actually his psychiatrist that told him
who
this.
Told
but
him
that's
that?
But that's mm-hmm. the dual presentation of that is supposed to tell us, the audience, that the fact that he was like this doesn't mean that anybody, right? Because to go back to the Anthony Perkins thing, you know, if you or Glenn or Glenda, Ed Wood. Right. Ed right. Wood, somebody who just liked to dress up in women's clothing and like, maybe yeah. that's just your kink and you're harmless. And this is not, there's no slippery slope. You're not going to go murder anybody and put on their skin. It's just like, this is something you like to do. And somebody should be able to live with dignity,
absolutely,
having that as their be. Kink.
Certainly.
Even if they don't want to necessarily announce it on a podcast or something. That's
right. So, thing. So, Mark, are you announcing
no,
on this podcast
today? No,
I'm
not
today?
Announcing on this okay, podcast.
I want you to know this is a safe space, man. You can say what you need to say about
this. Not a safe space, but nonetheless.
but I mean, yes, no one should feel as though they cannot exist because they enjoy wearing women's clothes. No one should feel that they have no place in society because they have these weird kinks or whatever that I consider to be weird kinks, but probably not terribly weird kinks. The problem, the line that's crossed is when you start digging up bodies and start killing people.
Yeah.
That's the line that's crossed. And I think that the show does
multiple
a
lines,
decent job.
Yes.
Yeah, multiple lines. The show does a decent job of saying this part of Ed Gein, there's nothing wrong with him. Where the show loses me, where it begins to kind of not outright say, but kind of suggest that behavior is tied to the other really bad stuff that he does. And it doesn't say it explicitly, but in me watching the show, it's almost implicitly suggested.
Well, for him, it was a slippery slope. That it was. That like once you start, yeah. you know, so you start doing this and then, well, didn't they depict it as that it was his girlfriend that said, you know what,
yeah.
you need somebody yeah. to have sex with. You should just use a dead body. Like as if he just never would have thought of that in his own. I don't know what to make of that weird editorial choice
yeah.
or if there's any
sort
of plausibility.
And there's no evidence that ever happened.
Yeah. That seems pretty made up.
Yeah. So why include it in a real life, you know, show like a show that's supposed to be depicting real life. Yeah. It's dramatized, but why include it? I think it's
trying to show how the slope could be that slippery. Like just the fact that he is a hunter and that he
right.
might be the kind of person that you would go and find in his barn, a hog that is slit right. down the middle, hanging like mm-hmm. that. Like,
right.
I don't think that's actually a slippery slope that people who are hunters and would know how to butcher a pig, that they're going to start doing that to people, but it sure does make it a little easier. Like if I tried to do something, like, I don't know where to start. I'm not going to, You know, but, no if you've, but if you've done that with animals and you've skinned mm-hmm. animals and you're stuffing animals, like, yeah, well, maybe, okay, yeah, this is at least you. Gives you some of the skills that make it right. conceivable that you might mm-hmm. do this horrible thing to a person, even though obviously there's a tremendous line between those two things. And again, if you're absolutely. Just into stuffing animals, even your dead pets, you do you. That's there's nothing right. illegal about that. I might find that creepy.
It's definitely weird and it's creepy. I don't like it, but sure, go for it.
But yeah, we don't think that things like that are going to naturally escalate. It's just for his personality. Yes, things are going to escalate. So once digging a body starts to be a thing and like, well, this body is too cold or, you know, this, I want a fresh mm-hmm. body. Like, it just seems like a natural horror movie thing, at least to like, yeah. okay, now we have to start killing a few people.
Yeah, it's just strange editorial choices. You know, I don't know because I don't think we have any credible evidence about where he got the idea. Like, we know that he was schizophrenic, but where he got the idea to do some of the things that he did. And so I find it to be deeply irresponsible on the behalf of the writers and the showrunners to depict some of the stuff that they do that they're just not true. And because we're talking about real people who were dug up, like legitimate real people who lived lives that had families that were dug up, real people who died. And so we just got to be a little bit more careful.
It was a while ago. Does that make a difference?
Yeah,
the fact that this guy was born in what they said 1910 or something like that.
It doesn't make a difference. Absolutely not.
I think depictions of Jack the Ripper are fundamentally different than depictions of the BK killer or whatever, you know, that's
BTK,
happened.
Yeah.
BTK, the Burger King killer. This happened King. In our lifetime. I know nothing about the BTK. I have not seen anything.
Hamburglar running around killing people, man. You got to watch out for the Hamburglar guy.
I do feel like maybe that is
Wait. That's McDonald's. Hamburglar is McDonald's, right? Am I wrong?
You're right.
I think I'm wrong.
It is all Burger King does not have the.
God damn it. I'm sorry.
See,
I'm sorry.
McDonald's has a mayor. And then, you know, some anti-crime for is, yeah. So you got your Hamburglar, you got your Mayor McCheese who,
wait a second, there's a Mayor McCheese?
Yeah, you don't know about this Mayor
McCheese? No, I don't know.
So you're not quite old enough to have been in the golden age of the McDonald land.
No, clearly not.
Presentations of their world.
I know Hamburglar and Ronald McDonald and then that big green, no, purple dude.
Grimace.
That's all I know.
Yes.
That's all I know. I don't know anything about a land. And a mayor? Well, this is news to me. I had no idea. Okay, sorry. Back to Ed Gein. Sorry, McDonald's.
I mean, there's got to be. Did I not tell you that I just, at a Riot Fest in Chicago that I drove down to, there was mm-hmm. a Mac Sabbath was the name of the band. That they do Black Sabbath covers, but they're dressed as McDonaldland. Characters.
What the hell?
So the Ozzy Osbourne.
What kind of weird stuff do you go to, Mark? Holy crap.
This was the Weird Al stage. Weird Al personally picked everyone that was on this stage.
Anyway,
people can Google on YouTube Mac Sabbath for what. So there is something about the trashiness of the commercialism.
Oh my goodness. Uh-huh.
That I think, you know, so Killer Clowns. It's not an accident, yeah. right? This is a very common thing. And that this right. is what, you know, to get back to finish up on the Terrifier, because this is the natural conclusion of this. Yeah. What kind of culture are we? What kind of people are we that this exists? And I assume there's going to be
popular.
Terrifier 4, at least three and a half.
There will be another one. I think the next one will be the last one. That's what the director Damien Leone. He said there will be one more, and that's supposed to be the end of it. But what does it say about us as a culture that not only does it exist, but it's also incredibly popular? I think mm-hmm. that is the philosophical question there that I'm actually quite interested in, because it offers commentary upon me and why I like the things that I like. Now, I don't like all that stuff though. Like, some of the stuff is too much for me. But the old
come now, if Terrifier is not too much for you. But you're saying that you don't like that either, even though you're watching it. You're watching it for scholarly purposes.
No, I mean, I'm watching it because I want to watch it, but I don't enjoy watching it. I've already established it. I'm a glutton for punishment. But the Terrifier thing, it was just so popular that I had to try to. I wanted to understand why it was popular, what is the appeal to it? And I think that Sid the Clown, I think his name is Sid the Clown, whatever his name is,
Art the
the
Clown.
clown, Art the Clown. I'm thinking about Sid the Kid, who is from Odd Future. Don't worry about that. Anyway, but Art the Clown is a very charismatic, funny character. I thought he's a wonderful character. And there's clearly something that is appealing about that character, but it's the gore. I don't understand why people enjoy that so much. That's too far. And maybe it's just that people enjoy special effects in the way that you watch stuff because you enjoy special effects. And that's the reason why you don't mind watching some of the most depraved things that's ever been put to screen because you're fascinated by the special effects. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it says about us. I don't know why it is appealing to us. The spiritual stuff, the spooky stuff, I get that. The gory stuff and the really uncomfortable things, I don't understand why we're intrigued by those things.
Sid the Clown made me Google Sid the Clown, and it brought up Sid Haig, who played the clown, one of the bad guys in
Oh,
House
Sid
of a
Haig.
Thousand Corpses.
That is Rob
So
Zombie's
Rob
character.
Zombie is like the missing link between the things that we're talking
Probably
about, that
is.
he is the
Probably is.
precursor to the Terrifier, and all of his movies are so
Unpleasant. Just
yes, but I've
deeply
watched
unpleasant
most
films.
of them.
I've seen all of them.
And
I've
House of a
seen all
Thousand
of them.
Corpses in particular, so you got your Rainn Wilson and you got your who is the really famous podcaster who got canceled, who's a philosophy major
No
and
idea.
the Nerdist, Chris Hardwick. So Chris Hardwick is the other guy besides Rainn Wilson, who are the two fellows among the foursome that wander in the House of a Thousand Corpses, and both of the men are made into horrific sculptures. Like Rainn Wilson is made into a mermaid kind of thing, merman with
I
his.
don't even know what's going on. It's weird. Let's just say it's weird. Whatever, they're
It is
made into weird
unforgettable.
stuff.
And partially it's because it's Rainn Wilson. It's those guys that I know from other things. I don't remember the women in the movie, not be, against them. I just, they're not well-known character actors from The Office. If Ellie Kemper was in it, I would remember that.
You remember that, yeah. It's so strange. All of Rob Zombie's stuff is so weird. He's just such a weird guy. Although I will say that he made a movie about witches. I forgot the name of the movie, but it's a riff on the Salem witch trials, and it's like taking place in modern day and all that kind of stuff. That is actually a legitimately really good movie. I really enjoyed that movie. But the rest of his stuff is just so trashy. He really has a thing about showing like he makes Halloween films and make them like white trash movies. He's just such a weird dude, Rob
Is this the
Zombie.
Lords of Salem?
That's the one. I really
Okay,
enjoyed that
I
film.
actually did not see that.
I quite enjoyed that film. Really, really good.
I missed the one actually good
It's
zombie film
trashy.
in
It's
favor.
definitely kind
Oh,
of
okay.
trashy, but it's really good though. I really think that he's doing something interesting with that
I
one.
guess the fact that it still stars his wife, Sherry Moon
Yeah.
Zombie, who is, I don't want to say a bad actor, but like
She's not
is
the
not going to
greatest.
be in.
Yeah, she's not the greatest.
And I'm probably somebody's going to point out, oh, actually, she did this other thing with Paul Thomas Anderson, and it's
No, I
probably
doubt
not.
it. I sincerely doubt it. She's not the greatest actress, and she's kind of and she it's weird. Like he uses her for like sex appeal, and that's his wife. It's so weird. I don't like it. I don't like what he's doing. I don't like the stuff that he does.
All right, any just to finish, let's do we'll be a full normal podcast length. Give us a little more. You have recommendations from this year, or I don't know if recommendations is the right word, but things that are
No, I do,
interesting.
man. I've been watching a lot of stuff, man. I watch a lot of stuff during Halloween season. Black Phone 2, I think, is actually a legitimately really good movie.
Okay.
It's really good. It takes a left turn and tries to turn the Grabber, who's Ethan Hawke, into like a Freddy Krueger-like
I mean, it would
character.
have to.
And it's really good. It's a really good movie. Like the reviews have been relatively positive. It's blowing up in the box office. I think that's a really good movie. That's something that I would say anyone should watch. But I've also watched Bring Her Back again. That's streaming on HBO Max. It's very disturbing, but really good, really well made. Done by the people who did the Hand movie. Forgot the name of the movie. Felipe, I think is the name of the brothers. But gosh, the name of that movie is gonna escape me. But nevertheless, really well made. So I've been watching a lot of interesting horror stuff, man. Megan 2, not very good, but it's streaming on Peacock if you want to watch it. I've really been impressed with Peacock's horror offerings. They've done a really good job of showing a lot of really good movies. Like the new Fright Night is on there. The old Fright Night is on there. I've just been watching, so there's a lot of good horror movies out there.
Talk to Me is the one that you were referring to.
Talk to Me, that's the
I
one.
haven't
And then
seen
of
that.
course, oh, you should
I
watch
will
that.
take
That
that
is
as a
a
recommendation.
legitimately, that is a great movie. Talk
Things
to Me,
about
really, really
disembodied
good.
hands running around doing stuff. I'm in for
No,
that. Nope.
is they're not running around. It's not the thing. But nevertheless, I thought that, so Haunted Hotel is a show that's on Netflix. It's animated. That's really good. There's
Really?
already been green. Yeah, it's really good. It's
Okay.
and it's already been greenlit for a second season. It's definitely adult animation, but it's not so bad that you can't watch it with kids, because I've been watching it with my kids. It's fine. It's relatively good. So there's a lot of good horror offerings out there that if you want to go hardcore, you can go hardcore. If you want to be something a little bit more lighthearted, there's Wednesday and Haunted Hotel. So there's a lot out there. Just watch some good stuff, guys. It's Halloween. Get into it.
Thanks for hanging out, Lawrence. Thanks, listeners.
Thanks, guys. It's always fun. You know what? This was so much fun, Mark. We need to do this more often. We need to do more mini things.
All right. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.